Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, the Minister for Justice and Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, is here in the studio. Good morning to you.
Thank you for
joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Firstly, to that news we were just talking about, that there have been arrests in the Kerry Babies case. That news last night, I think, came as a shock to very many people when they heard it and who have followed the story over the past four decades. What's your own reaction to it?
Well, look, I think we're going back to a time in Ireland that was extraordinarily traumatic and painful for people in Carrigrohane, for people in Kerry, for people across the country. We've got to remember here, the most innocent of people, an innocent baby, was found murdered on a beach. And no matter how long ago it was or how different in Ireland it may have been, every person in Ireland, young or old, has a right to truth and justice. And I know the Gardaí have been working extraordinarily hard on this, particularly since a renewed effort in 2018. I obviously don't want to say anything that cuts across a very live and very ongoing investigation, other than to encourage anybody with any information to come forward, mm-hmm. because this is a pivotal moment. And anybody who has any information, no matter how small, that could be extremely helpful. I'm also, though, conscious of the fact that this was also a time that really brought a lot of pain in terms of the biases that existed in Ireland. It was a defining moment in social history. And I very much think of Joanne Hayes today and her own family and all of the pain that she went through and the really despicable and unacceptable way she was treated at this time. And of course, I think for her, and can only imagine how painful it today, a day like today, must be for her also.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll have updates from the Gardaí over the course of the day. Now, just in the last few minutes, we're hearing that the Gardaí have confirmed that the disappearance of Annie McCarrick has been upgraded to a murder investigation. What more can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so literally around now, the Gardaí have made a decision based on a whole variety of scenarios to reclassify the missing person investigation into Annie McCarrick as a full murder investigation. People will remember that Annie went missing in Ireland at 26 years of age. She was somebody from the States who had come to Ireland, who had fallen in love with Ireland, who'd studied in Ireland and who'd returned to live here permanently. Annie's dad died without ever knowing what happened to his beloved daughter, and her mother, Nancy, has every right to know what happened to her daughter. The Gardaí have been working extremely hard on this, carried out so many interviews, have indeed visited Nancy in New York relatively recently. And today they've made a decision for a variety of reasons to upgrade that to a full murder investigation.
Is one of those reasons that they have new evidence in the case?
They're specifically looking, and I just want to get this information accurately, they're specifically looking for anybody who has particular information. They're looking for anybody who spoke with or had any interaction with Annie on the 26th of March 1993 or subsequently. They're absolutely clear that there are people who have information on the disappearance of Annie and her murder on or about the 26th of March 1993 who've yet to speak to Gardaí, or people who may have spoken to the Gardaí at the time but weren't in a position to tell everything they knew at that time. And they also particularly want to speak to any person who has information on the large brown handbag which it's believed that Annie was in possession of when she went missing. So 30 years on, they and I are really encouraging anyone with, again, any information to come forward. And they've also obviously published pictures of both Annie and indeed the brown leather bag today as well.
All right. And we'll be speaking to RTÉ's Barry Cummins on that. He's at that press conference for us. So we'll get more detail on that in a little while. Now, just to turn to politics for a moment. The lifting of the eviction ban is a story that has dominated the headlines, not just this week, but previous weeks too. If the result of the lifting of that ban is radically increased homelessness, as experts in the field have said it will be, do you think the electorate will forgive you for that?
I think by the time we go into the election, which is probably around 2 years away, the people of this country will want to see real progress on housing. I think there's absolutely no party in Dáil Éireann who doesn't want to make progress. There's just a debate about how best to do it. We have to be honest with people, though. When we brought in the eviction ban, it was always about buying a period of time, giving people longer to look at their own options and time to build more homes.
But the accusation is the government didn't do anything in that time.
And I really reject that. I see it in my own constituency of Wicklow, where we're now ahead of our social housing targets. I see it across the country with new homes having been built, more social houses having been built than any year since 1975, more people having bought their first home last year than any year going back quite a number. So there has been real progress. We can't, though, when it comes to housing, mislead people. it is not possible to have an eviction ban in place for longer than a certain period of time, for a temporary period of time. We were able to bring one in during COVID. We were able to bring one in for a brief period of time during the winter. And government is about having to take tough decisions sometimes, and this was a difficult and tough decision. But I also reject the assertion that's put out there that this is about kind of accelerating people actually being evicted from their homes, because a number of measures have been put in place to assist those people.
You don't accept that there will be an increase in homelessness as a result of this?
Sadly, I have to accept that homelessness increased, I think, every month that the eviction ban was in place. And I think there was a real, and if I had been sitting in your studio when the eviction ban was first brought in, I think I would have been saying to you, and you probably would have thought it sounded credible, that actually you'd imagine homelessness would have stalled during that period of time, and it didn't.
So it didn't work, the eviction ban?
It certainly didn't have the desired effect. But also it was only ever a temporary breathing space to allow more capacity coming through and other measures. So, for example, my local authority in Wicklow and local authorities across the country now can actually now buy up a home if somebody is at risk of eviction. And that's what we need to see happen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can't be clearer here. If you're at risk of homelessness, the local authority is empowered to do things now that it wasn't empowered to do a number of months ago.
It's just interesting that the independents, in order to get their support, the government agreed to do a couple of rapid fire things, which are in train now and will take a number of weeks. And we were speaking to O'Coolan, the housing association, and others who said, why not just give it a little bit more time to get those measures in place, because the legislation is going to take a little while. Why not do that?
Because there'll always be a little more time to do something else. The reality of the situation is we have to get on with absolutely everything to do with supply here, and that is what's happening. So there are things that no one's waiting for in a month's time or 2 months' time. There are things that are happening now that wouldn't have been happening a number of months ago. And I think the biggest genuine change is the local authority having an ability to purchase your home and rent it back to you if you're at risk of being homeless. That is a very significant policy shift. Minister O'Brien now has put more heft behind that in terms of being able to do more. And yes, there will be more measures. And in terms of engaging with others in opposition, we did engage with people who came forward with constructive suggestions this week. And I think that's the way people would expect us to do. If people are willing
you
not engage to play politics.
You engaged because you had to.
Well, actually, the numbers, truthfully, I mean, it's certainly helpful to have them, but truthfully, the numbers didn't show that. I mean, the government majority, contrary to a lot of predictions, held up this week. And when this issue was put to the people's representatives in Dáil Éireann, the result was very conclusive. Mm. This wasn't a close vote in the Dáil.
And you've got two more votes coming now, yes, don't you? One from Sinn Féin and the Labour motion of no confidence. And you just mentioned the timing of the election there at the start. You spoke about it being 2 years out. Leo Varadkar said yesterday that if the motion of no confidence were passed, it would mean an election in 4 weeks' time. And he said nobody wants that. But people might want that. 12 years of the same party in government is too long for some people.
You see, sometimes, and respectfully I say this, sometimes people like to use the 12 years as a negative. I actually think it's a strength. I'm not sure of any other profession where somebody suggests experience is actually a bad thing. If you were in hospital today and about to have surgery, would you like to have the surgeon who has the experience of the guy doing their first operation? The reality is there are a number of challenges facing this country. Housing is one. Dealing with the Windsor Framework Agreement, as our Taoiseach is doing today. The economy, the cost of living, the war in Ukraine. And we have been in government for a long time. Our opponents think that's a bad thing. We don't. And there's more that we want to do. And certainly, I often hear the opposition saying the government's out of ideas. It looks to me like the opposition is, because now what they're doing is wasting Dáil time next week having another motion of confidence. Mm-hmm. When clearly the issue...
Which they're entitled to do.
Entirely. As I'm entitled to say that I believe it's a waste of Dáil time, because the matter was tested in the Dáil this week and there was a conclusive verdict given. Mm-hmm. But clearly there's a tussle on the left for relevance. And we have different parties on the left now marking each other in terms of who can be vociferous in opposition, rather than actually what some people in opposition did this week, coming forward with constructive suggestions that government was able to work with them on.
How comfortable are you that you had to buy the independents' support?
Well, firstly, there's two inaccuracies there, respectfully. One, we didn't. The government majority was maintained. And secondly, accepting good, decent, constructive ideas, including ideas that are supported by many in my own party and that they've been advocating for some time, is a good thing to do.
But you must be thinking, what are they going to look for now at budget time?
No, I mean, you'll be conscious that I was in cabinet for 4.5 years as health minister in a minority government, and we managed to reach across the aisle and work with people in the Dáil. We have a government majority. The government majority has upheld, but we will always reach out and work with people in opposition, in either opposition parties or independents who have good ideas. And I think that's what people expect politicians to do, not this shouting and roaring at each other in
the
Dáil.
So you don't think Dennis Nocton is sitting down scribbling away on his shopping list for the next round?
I think Deputy Dennis Nocton is a man who decided he's not going to seek re-election at the next general election. But despite that, wants to use every day he's in the Dáil to put forward good ideas, and I think that's to his credit.
Now, you're launching a new Garda recruitment campaign today, and you're looking to take on 1,000 new Gardaí at the end of the year. We've heard a lot about attacks on Gardaí and how difficult that job is. Who and why would they want to do that job?
Well, I think some of the issues we've just discussed at the top of this programme is a stark reminder of the impact that being a member of an Garda Síochána can have. Nobody is suggesting that being a guard is easy. It's a very tough job, in fact, but it's a job in which you can have real impact, whether it's keeping your neighbours and community safe, whether it's busting up criminal drug gangs, whether it's helping tackle human trafficking, whether it's finding a missing child, whether it's bringing truth and justice to your country. So it's an impactful job. It's a job worth doing. We have seen, you're quite right, a rise in attacks and assaults on members of an Garda Síochána. We should though absolutely call out the fact that when it happens, people in this country are still utterly repulsed. We shouldn't allow a small bunch of thugs give the impression that somehow or other this has become acceptable in our country. It hasn't. And I met all of the rep bodies, including AGSI and the GRA, in the last couple of weeks. And we intend to change the law between now and the summer recess to have harsher sanctions in relation to any attack or assault on a guard or any other frontline worker, including the ramming of a guard or emergency vehicle.
But you must still feel that it's putting people off. I know the target last year was 800, wasn't it? And you got about half of that?
I think I do think they're slightly separate issues. I do think we need to absolutely show, and we will show in law, that assaults and attacks on Gardaí and other frontline workers are utterly unacceptable, societally unacceptable. They're an attack on democracy. On the issue of recruitment, being honest, it takes a while to crank up the machine. There's a lot of parts to recruiting a guard, and rightly so. The vetting, the medical, the fitness. Temple Moor was closed at least twice, I think, during the COVID pandemic. And we've been working now to get the pipeline going and going properly. And it has. We saw about 500 people either enter or exit Temple Moor as guards during the last year. And I expect we will get 1,000 guards into Temple Moor. I updated Cabinet on that this week.
So is
and
that,
the Garda Commissioner has updated me.
Is the delay in Temple Moor, or as you say, not having that machine cranked up, is that why the target wasn't reached and was missed by 50% last year?
That's my view. I'll explain why. Because if you actually look at the, if you look at the figures, the amount of people expressing an interest in joining the Gardaí is very strong and very healthy. The amount of people going beyond that initial expression of interest and actually completing an interview, very strong. People going on for their medicals, their fitness tests, their vetting. These are all important parts, though. I mean, remember, the Gardaí are responsible not just for policing, but also our Gardaí have a national security function. Things like vetting and being done right are extremely important. Things like helping people get through the fitness exam. So we've now actually put out explainer videos on how you prepare for the fitness exam, because just like an academic test, it does require preparation. But we will have another intake of Gardaí go into Temple Moor in May, and then every 10 to 11 weeks thereafter.
Jim O'Callaghan, the Fianna Fáil TD, people might have seen the video he made where he replicated the fitness test, and he's concerned that it's too stringent. Do you have a view on that? Should that change?
Well, he passed it. He passed it.
But you felt the need to put out explainer videos.
Yeah, no, I think the fitness test, like any test, requires preparation. Deputy O'Callaghan did the test and proved that the test is passable. I note the support from the Garda bodies, AGSI and the GRA, about not dumbing down in any way the fitness test. It's important. We have fit and healthy Gardaí. It's important they're supported in ensuring that they're fit and healthy. And that's the benefit of the explainer
videos. And do you know why, or has anyone tried to establish why, 50 Gardaí in 2021, who were part of the Temple Moor programme, decided not to finish?
So now the Gardaí are doing, as indeed I think are some of the rep bodies, exit interviews to try and get under the bonnet of exactly that. It is important, and I don't ever trivialise, and you shouldn't as Minister for Justice when someone decides to leave the Gardaí, but the overall numbers of people who either don't finish or indeed resign from the Gardaí are still quite small relative to the overall public sector.
We had a representative on from the Western Australian Police Force on the programme talking about their recruitment campaign. They're offering a very attractive package for Gardaí who want to move to Australia. Does that concern you?
No, because I think we offer an attractive package as well. And I think there's a lot of people who are motivated to serve their community, to serve their country, to wear the uniform of an Garda Síochána 100 years on from its foundation. You know, one of the real frustrations in Ireland for many years was during the financial crash, the closure of the Garda College, then during COVID, having to stop Garda recruitment. All of those issues are now long in the rearview mirror. We're back training, we're back recruiting. And I should actually say, for anyone who'd like to be a guard, they've 3 weeks from today to apply if they go to publicjobs.ie. Campaign is open today. It is a difficult job. It is a job worth doing. And we need you. We need your assistance.
So any guard who's looking at what the Western Australians were offering, higher salary, permanent residency, a lot of sunshine, are you telling them, asking them to ignore that?
Well, look, I think there's lots of reasons why people decide to do different things in their lives. It's not for me to dictate that to anybody. But I think actually being a guard in Ireland is a very rewarding career. I think there's many good parts of being a member of an Garda Síochána Síochána, and there's many good reasons to want to obviously live in your own country, raise your family here in Ireland as well.
We touched on the assaults that we've heard about, but also the policing of protests and demonstrations has become a big issue for Gardaí. And I was speaking to the former Assistant Commissioner, Pat Leahy, on this, and he feels that more legislation is needed on that front because it's very difficult for the Gardaí. They are powerless when it comes to actually doing anything.
So I have a lot of time for former Assistant Commissioner Leahy. I've asked the Garda Commissioner in relation to this, and I'm not aware of any request for additional legislation. If such requests came, of course, they'd be dealt with extremely seriously. But I do want to say this. I mean, I think the Gardaí are doing an excellent job managing what can be very sensitive and difficult situations. Certainly, they're not powerless because we've already seen a number of arrests and indeed some prosecutions in relation to some behaviour that I'll never describe as protest that was clearly intimidatory and dangerous. I do think, though, it is probably time in Ireland to look more broadly at the public order legislation. And I've had some discussions with, again, the Garda representative bodies to just make sure that it's absolutely fit for purpose for the modern realities that our Gardaí face. And I've invited both AGSI and the GRA as the Garda rep bodies to make submissions to me on areas that they believe further legislative improvements could be made. And I discussed them with the Commissioner on receipt.
So do we read from that you don't feel it's robust enough?
No, I am satisfied today from my engagement with the Commissioner that he believes he has all of the legislation that he requires to police those situations. I do think that we need to, as I've already said, better protect the Gardaí in terms of any attacks that they encounter. I do think we need to, and we will, introduce the law to give the guards body cams this year. I think one of the most ironic scenarios is that often at a protest, the only person there without a camera is the guard. And I do think that puts our Gardaí in a vulnerable position and also the wider community. So it is the Garda Commissioner's intention to roll out a pilot for body cams later this year. And I'm trying to support that with the passage of legislation.
As part of that, are you looking at protests outside of people's homes?
I'm not currently, because constitutionally it's quite a challenging and difficult thing to do. There is legislation, I believe from my memory, I think it's from Senator Malcolm Byrne, suggesting this, and I think the government's view is that this should be allowed go to a committee to tease through the various issues.
Okay. TikTok. You're active on TikTok, and we know that a number of parliaments around the world, including the EU Commission, has told staff and elected representatives to take it off their work phones. They don't want it for security reasons. Do you think it's wise to have that on any phone? You're the Minister for Justice.
So I don't comment, for very obvious reasons, on the security advice given to me, because sometimes there's people who don't have Ireland's best interests at hand who listen into these interviews and hear what I say. So I don't comment on the security advice I follow, other than to say that I follow security advice, that I'm well aware of how to have secure and safe conversations. And I'm very conscious of the sensitive information that I come across as Minister for Justice. So certainly there's always national security advice and security advice available to me as Minister for Justice.
So what you're telling me is you have taken precautions on this front.
Correct.
Are you examining, though, whether there should be a general ban of TikTok from state devices?
So the National Cybersecurity Centre, which actually sits in the Department of Communications, and my colleague, Minister Oisín Smith, has responsibility for its work from a DAW point of view, has made it clear that they are looking at not just any one particular social media app, but in general, apps and social media use on government devices. That seems like a sensible thing to do.
How quickly are you expecting a decision on that? Because, as I said, action has been taken elsewhere pretty swiftly.
So again, I'm certainly aware that this is kind of ongoing and that there is always guidance made available, particularly to people in sensitive roles and people in government roles. It's a matter for them to decide when they wish to bring forward more advice.
I want to ask you as well about questions that the Taoiseach was asked about whether a biological male should be imprisoned in a female prison. And Leo Varadkar replied, "No, I don't, quite frankly." Do you agree with him?
I think he was asked specifically in relation to the word violent as well. And I want to really reassure people in relation to this. And I met the Director General of the Irish Prison Service yesterday. There is no scenario in an Irish prison where a violent sex offender is mixing with other prisoners. If there's somebody at risk of being violent or harming other prison other prisoners or other prison officers, prison staff, there are regimes and structures that are followed to keep people safe. So I think it's right and proper that the Irish Prison Service is now putting in place a policy in relation to this, is looking at best international practice. But I don't want anybody listening to this programme to think that there's a scenario today where a violent sex offender who is at risk of harming other prisoners is mixing with that general prison population.
Mm-hmm. And in general terms, let's take out the word violent from that. Do you believe that a biological male should be imprisoned in a female prison?
So I believe, firstly, that the Irish Prison Service should carry out its policy. I believe that the overriding objective here has to be the risk assessment of every prisoner. This is about human rights, but it's also about, crucially, about the safety of the prison population, the prison estate, and prison staff. And I don't think there is one universal answer. I think it's about risk assessing. But it is right and proper, outside of kind of politics here, that I think the Irish Prison Service gets to examine the evidence, look at what other jurisdictions does, and finalise its policy. And I expect them to be in a position to do that in the next few weeks.
Okay, just finally, I want to ask you about this long-awaited report on familicide, first expected to be completed by last March. Now, we know it is done, and we know that you have it in the department. We were told it will be published this year. When are we going to see that?
I hope to be able to publish it in either April or May. I want to meet the families first. Families have given extraordinarily generously of their time and their insight from the most traumatic and horrific situations imaginable to any human being. I met Maura Butler, the person who was commissioned to carry out the report. I met her, I'm going to say, in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I had an excellent meeting with her. It's a very complex area. There's obviously the criminal justice issues. We're all well aware of them. But there are other issues as well, including how other parts of the state interact, did interact, didn't interact in advance of these horrific scenarios occurring. The most important thing I want to do now in the month of April is meet the families directly who have impacted into this report. I'll meet them. I'll discuss with them the report. They've been kept updated. I'll discuss with them how I intend to proceed with the report. And then, subject to those meetings going well, I then intend to bring the report to government.
Minister, thank you very much for coming in. That's the Minister for Justice, Simon Harris. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.